today on Summit Life with J.D. Greer.
This is the revelation of God himself. This is a picture of his character. This is his face. These commandments are his beauty, his holiness, his righteousness. So obeying these commandments is a way of participating in the very character of God.
As believers, we know we're saved by God's grace alone, not by any rules that we follow. So why does the Bible give us so many rules we can never fully live up to? Today, Pastor JD answers that question, and he describes the purpose of the Old Testament instructions and how they reveal God to us. It's a message on the Ten Commandments, and it's part of a foundational series called This Is What the Heart Looks Like. Right now, here's Pastor JD Greer. He titled today's message, God's Laws in Our Lives.
There is this assumption in our culture. It's widespread. And the assumption is that if something doesn't feel right immediately, it's got to be wrong. Y'all, even though this is a widespread belief, it's pretty absurd when you think about it. Right? I mean, it really, just put a little thought to it. It's pretty absurd. I'll prove it to you. Right? In the morning, when your alarm clock goes off, what feels right at that moment? Anybody in here just leap out of bed, 5:30, you're like, man, I can't wait for the day. So excited about this. Don't raise your hand because we'll all hate you, okay? It's not normal. You're like, 5 more minutes. Where did it go? And you reach over and you slap your alarm clock. 5 more minutes. And then you do it again in 5 minutes. And you keep slapping it. Now, why do we do that? Why do we do that? Because what feels right in the moment is not really what leads us to freedom. What happens if you stay in bed all day? All right, well, A, you lose your job. B, even if you don't lose your job, right, because you live in your mama's basement, you play video games all day, even if that's you, then you feel sluggish all day, right? You sleep at 10 o'clock every day. You just feel like trash. What you learn is that doing what your body wants to do isn't always the pathway to freedom. And sometimes you have to tell your body no because you know the pathway to freedom is something different. The way for me to have real freedom in life is to get up when I'm supposed to, go to work, and keep myself healthy. Or think about it in another form. Think about when you exercise. When you are exercising, everything in your body tells you to stop, doesn't it? But you got to tell your body to shut up and do the extra set, because if you don't, you know you're going to die of a heart attack. And here's the crazy thing. Some of us pay people to yell at us to make us exercise. I pay a person to yell at me because I know if he doesn't yell at me, I'll never do the extra stuff. You go to a restaurant, suddenly your nostrils are filled with unbelievable smells of steak and bread, and your body says, yes, this is what I want. But then sometimes you got to say, no, I will be disciplined, and I will go to the salad bar, and I will stuff my plate with alfalfa sprouts and garbanzo beans and radishes, and that's what I'm going to eat. That never really happens to me. I'm just using it as an illustration. The point is, we all know that what our body desires is not always best. And so we subject the aberrant desires of our heart to our minds because our minds know what will give us true freedom. Now, here's the question. Does it make any sense to do that for the body and not for the soul? You see, medical doctors may have studied how the physical body works, but God understands how the soul works, how your heart works. And these commandments are written according to the blueprint of what our hearts are like. So as we obey them, we find freedom, because it is a freedom that flows out of how God designed us in shalom. Okay? Number two, these commandments reveal God to us. These commandments reveal God to us. That's why they're given. To show you this, let me take you back into sort of the context in Exodus when these commands are given. Now, as I told you, God has just brought the people out of Egypt to the Red Sea. That's what we refer to as the Exodus, because they're leaving. Now, the whole point of the Exodus was that people would know God. I've explained to you before, this is another thing the movies always get wrong. In the movies, Charlton Heston is always like, God says, let my people go. But that's not really what God said through Moses. In fact, it's only half of what God said, and it's not even the most important part of what was said. What was really said is, God says, let my people go that they might worship me. The point was knowing God. And so here they are. They've been delivered from slavery, and now they're ready for the point of the whole Exodus, which is to know and worship God. So God introduces himself to them in Exodus 19, right after they've left Egypt. There's a mountain they called Sinai. And on top of this mountain, God descends. And it is truly an unbelievable and terrifying and awesome scene. It says that when God descends on this huge mountain, I've actually been there to this mountain, I've seen it. The whole mountain began to shake. The whole mountain became engulfed in fire and smoke. There was a sound coming out from the mountain that Moses said was like a trumpet that continually blew and just got louder and louder and louder. If you watch the World Cup, that annoying thing that they do just in the background, imagine that at like 50 times the decibel volume. It's just ear-splitting noise. There's lightning. There is thunder. God's presence was on that mountain, and then God gave the instructions. He says, you put a perimeter on this mountain, and if somebody even steps foot across that perimeter, they're going to be struck dead immediately. And you're standing there watching this as God descends on this mountain, and you're terrified. Your kids are terrified. And you want to comfort them, but you can't because you're terrified too. Moses disappears up into this mountain for 40 days. And when he comes back, he's carrying the Ten Commandments. What's the point? The point is, this is the revelation of God himself. This is a picture of his character. This is his face. These commandments are his beauty, his holiness, his righteousness. So obeying these commandments is a way of participating in the very character of God. Because these things are a picture of God. They're God's beauty, his holiness. And don't get freaked out by that word holiness. You think it sounds weird. Holiness just means wholeness or completeness. It's the perfect picture of beauty and order or righteousness. Don't get freaked out by that word either. I told you the opposite of righteousness is wrongousness. Everything that is right about God. This is God's shalom. It's his beauty. It's his holiness. And so watch this. If we love him and we desire to know him and be with him, then these things are what we will pursue because these things are him. They're his character. All the New Testament writers talk about the commandments this way. For example, the Apostle Peter says this, chapter 1, verse 15, 1 Peter. As he who called you is holy, you also should be holy in all of your conduct. Why should you be holy? Because God is holy, and you want to be with and be like him. The Apostle John says it this way. When he appears, we will see him as he is. What does that mean? We'll see him the way that Israel saw him. In all of his beauty and all of his holiness. And then he says, everyone who has this hope purifies himself, even as he, God, is pure. 1 John 3:3. If seeing, watch this, if seeing and being with God is your greatest hope, then you want the makeup of your heart to be like the makeup of his. And so you pursue purity of heart and mind. If you don't pursue these things, then it means that you have some other hope in life that is greater than your hope of knowing God. In fact, write this down. What you pursue shows what you prize. What you pursue most shows what you prize most. If what you are most pursuing is career success and six-digit income and early retirement and material achievement, then what you prize most is money. If what you prize most is God, however, then what you pursue most is holiness and purity because that's what God is. You get this? If the only reason you obey the commandments is because you're afraid you'll be punished and humiliated if you don't, and not because you love the good and the pure behind the commandments, that shows your real problem is not an obedience problem. Your real problem is that you don't love God. Obedience to the commandments flows out of love for God. And some of you, your problem is not your behavior, it's your heart. Here's one more place. The Apostle Paul, Ephesians 5:1. As beloved children, become imitators of God. You see that? As beloved children, become imitators of God. We went over this in our Ephesians series. But children naturally imitate their parents when they love them. My kids do. I did as a kid. I remember as a kid trying to dress like my dad. Rooting for the same sports teams my dad did, using the same phrases that he used. This wasn't out of duty because I thought I'd get in trouble if I didn't. It came from a desire to imitate my dad's behavior because I wanted to be like him. I admired him and I loved him. Now, on the other hand, if you had a bad father, you might be just the opposite. You wanted to be completely unlike your dad because you hated him. Whatever political party he was, you wanted to be the opposite. Right? The point is, listen, these commandments reveal God. And if we love God, we'll do these commandments because these are what God is like. You see? Now, one more thing on this before we go to point number three. The fact that these commandments reveal God is the key to understanding their ongoing role in our lives. You see, a lot of people, when they start to read the Bible, have this question. They're like, okay, wait a minute. I've read in the New Testament something about Christ having freed us from the law, and we're not under the law, but we're under grace. And I read some of these laws in the Old Testament, and I know some of them we don't do anymore, such as we can all have cheese with our hamburgers, which Leviticus forbids. Right? And I know, you know, we're not supposed to wear mixed fibers. That's somewhere in Leviticus. And, you know, we can wear polyester. Right? And if you're wearing polyester, that might be a fashion sin, but it's not a moral one. Okay? So I guess we can do that. But, you know, so which laws are still applicable to us, and how do we know the difference? I mean, I guess the murder one still applies. Shouldn't do that. And probably the adultery one we shouldn't discard. How do you know which ones are applicable and how, which ones are not? That's a great question. Okay? So let me give you a quick explanation here, because I hear a lot of people ask me this. It's hard to really divide the laws up into different categories, but you realize that the laws serve three major purposes, all these laws. Here they are. One purpose they serve is ceremonial, and that is laws that prefigure Christ through symbols and ceremonies and rituals. Gave you a picture of who Christ was, feasts and festivals and sacrifice procedures. Well, Christ has now come. And because Christ has come, we're no longer required to do the symbols, because when you've got the real thing, you don't need a plastic replica anymore. Right? I mean, it makes sense. My wife, if you look on her left hand, you'll see that she's wearing a wedding ring. But if you look closer, you can probably notice that it's completely and totally fake. Why? Because we decided about a year and a half ago to donate our wedding ring to a stranger. It came in the form of just leaving it somewhere on a table, and I don't know who has it. If you have it, I would love to have it back. But otherwise, we lost it. Okay, that's kind of the bottom line here. Lost her wedding ring. So I didn't have insurance on it, so I'm saving up my money to be able to buy it again. And in the meantime, I don't want guys hitting on my wife, so I got her a little plastic, basically a bubblegum ring, that she wears on her ring finger. It has diamonds in it, but they're all fake. And all that does is temporarily demonstrate what should be there until the real thing is actually there. You follow this? Okay, so when I get her the wedding ring, we can throw away the plastic replica, because when the real thing's there, you don't need the thing that represents it. When Christ came, all of these laws in the Old Testament that told us he was coming, of course we don't have to observe those anymore because we have the real thing. In fact, in some places, God gave us new ceremonies to picture the fact that he's already come, like communion. Right, so there's a lot of ceremonial laws that we no longer observe. Then there are what we call civil laws, which regulated the national and social life of Israel. And of course, we don't obey those anymore. They're pretty cool to study because you can learn about God's sense of justice. But we don't apply them anymore because, hello, we're not living in a theocratic Israeli state anymore. Then thirdly, there are what we call revelatory laws, which reveal the character of God. These are commandments that give us a window into God's heart. They show us his face. Now, watch this. It is true that Christ has freed us from the law. But the God these laws reveal has not changed. And so the things that were offensive to him back then are still offensive to him. And the things that are harmful for us are still harmful for us. So these laws are still applicable. For example, God still loves purity. He still loves honesty. He still knows how he designed sex to work. Tithing might have been part of the law, but it also reveals God's plan for how we are to treat our money. So we still do it because God hasn't changed. In fact, I would say it like this. Our status under the law has changed, but the God those laws reveal has not. You're like, well, but some of them offend me. Of course they offend you. What, do you want God to be like you? See, that's what most Americans want. We've got to be just like us. And Americans have this unbelievably snooty attitude that feels like they're the first people in history to ever be offended by God's laws. Because we have arrived, and we're much smarter now than we used to be 300 years ago. And so now we know that these laws are archaic and stupid. I'm like, you know, if you ever go to another culture, you realize that God's laws offend people in every culture of every time, just in different places. You live over in an Islamic society, which I did for a while. The laws about sexual purity, the laws about honor, the laws about justice, they don't have no problems with those. You get to the laws about, you know, loving your enemies, turning your cheek, you turn the other cheek, about God becoming man, and they're all offended at those. It's like I've told you before, God's laws offend. God is an equal opportunity offender. He offends everybody, just in different places and different times. So get off your high horse and thinking that you're the first enlightened one to be offended by God. God is holy and you are not. You are simple. That's why you're offended. And you don't expect God to change. You change. I mean, you come up against the creator of the universe. You don't say, bend to my preferences. God's like, hello, I created this place. You bend to mine. Right? So of course they offend you. All right, so that's the law. Here we go. Number three. This is an extremely important one. Listen, this one determines whether or not you are a Christian. This number three determines whether or not you're a Christian, so you need to pay attention to this one. Number three, the commandments reveal the state of our hearts, but they cannot provide salvation. The commandments reveal the state of our hearts, but they cannot provide salvation. Look at Paul's words in Galatians 3. The law was our tutor to bring us to Christ, that we might be justified by faith. For if there had been a law given which could have given life, truly righteousness would have been by the law. But the implication is there's not a law that could ever bring righteousness. You see, when we look at these commandments, one of the first things we see, listen, is that our hearts crave a lot of things that go exactly contrary to these commandments. And that's why some of them feel restrictive, like a cage. We don't always want to tell the truth. We don't always desire marital faithfulness. We're jealous. Sometimes we really enjoy seeing other people we don't like get hurt. If these commandments reveal beauty and holiness, then they show me that what my heart desires is depravity and ugliness. If these commandments are righteousness, they show me my heart is characterized by wrongness. If these are godliness, they show me that my heart is godlessness. These commandments show us that in our hearts, we're all atheists. You might believe in your head that there is a God, but in your heart, you wish he was dead because your heart desires things that go exactly opposite of his character. And you may never say, well, I wish God is dead, but that's what your heart is saying. Because you're saying, well, what I really want to do are things that go against the character of God, and I desire those things, so I wish he were dead. That's what your heart is like. Now, here's the thing, listen, the law can't change that. It can just reveal it to you. There are two things the law can never give to you. Firstly, it can never give to you a righteous record. The universal way of thinking about breaking the laws of God is we think if we do enough good works, then it will offset the bad works we've done. So we get this image of a scale in our mind, and we put our good works on one side and our bad works on the other, and you weigh them out, and if the good works outweigh the bad works, then you go to heaven. So you sure hope that with all the mistakes you've made, you got 51% good works. That way you'll go into heaven. That is the wrong analogy. I've told you before, it's more like this. When I spent a summer in high school working up in upper state New York in the Adirondack Mountains, about 1,000 miles away from any form of civilization whatsoever. Okay, so of course we didn't have city water up there. They dug a well, and that's where the water came from. And nothing wrong with wells, I guess, except when you turn the spigot on and you got water out, it tasted like fish. There was a lake nearby. I'm sure that had something to do with it, but like a mixture of, you know, maybe catfish and little crappie thrown in there. It was nasty. So my roommate and I, working at this camp, figured out that if you poured enough lemonade powder into the water, you could cover up. It took about enough to make the water like syrup, but you could get it to a consistency where you couldn't smell the fish anymore. Now, in covering up the fish taste, did we actually get rid of whatever was in there, whatever carcinogen was causing the fish taste? No, we just covered it up. And some of you, you start to retch just thinking about drinking water like that. What the law does is it attempts to cover up our hearts with good deeds that somehow will mask our bad deeds, but that is not the way it works. When you look into the mirror of these commandments, you start to see that your heart, the wellspring of your heart, is saturated with sinful desire. Commandment number one, you should have no other gods but me. How many of you naturally, from your heart, love God supremely? Where knowing and obeying Him is your greatest quest and your greatest delight. You get more excited about your relationship with God than you do about sports, than you do about a new romance, a new job, a new series coming on TV you're excited about. How many of you, your hearts naturally have more excitement over God than over anything else? Commandment number four, remember the Sabbath. How many of you always naturally just give to God what is His? So you set aside one day a week and you don't violate it because that's His day. You do that with your budget too. You got 10% of the money that goes to God and you don't touch it. Does that come natural to you? Commandment number five, honoring your parents. I mean, you just naturally are submissive and obedient to whatever God-ordained authority is there in your life. Whether it's, you know, your parents when you're a teenager or traffic cops or the government now that you're an adult. How many of you just naturally like that? Don't even say yes. Commandment number six, don't kill. You'd probably give yourself a pass on this one and till you realize that Jesus said you only keep this one if you never desire the harm of somebody else. It's more than just not taking a knife to their throat. You don't fantasize about their harm. You're like, well, that's not fair because you're taking it out of the realm of the action and you're putting it in the realm of the heart and nobody can see our hearts. That's the point. God sees your hearts. Yeah, but what does He care about the heart for? What if you had a lover who every time they were with you fantasized in their heart about somebody else? You like that? God is holiness. And the only holiness He wants is holiness that springs from the heart's deepest desires. Commandment number seven, don't commit adultery. You're like, yeah, I've never fantasized about having sex with anybody I'm not married to. Commandment number nine, don't lie. You're like, yeah, I'm always truthful. I never exaggerate. I never bend or twist or hide the truth. Liar. If you just said yes to that one, total liar. Commandment number 10, don't covet. I mean, you say, yeah, I'm so satisfied with God. I just trust Him so completely. I never complain about what happens to me. I'm never greedy for the abilities, for the looks, for the position, for the body, or the possessions of others. When somebody else gets a blessing that I wanted, I don't, you know, complain. I rejoice with them. I've never once complained about what God has provided for me. I've always trusted Him and just been satisfied. Anybody here be like, yeah, that comes totally naturally to me. Y'all, do you see this? We are completely ruined by sin.
You're listening to Pastor J.D. Greer on Summit Life. To hear today's program again or to download the free unedited transcript, visit us online at jdgreer.com. And while you're there, you can also browse through previous studies or visit Pastor JD's blog for the latest relevant articles. We love making these resources available to you free of charge so that everyone can dive deeper into the gospel. But this mission is only possible because of friends like you who give generously to support this ministry. When you donate to Summit Life, you're really giving to your fellow listeners, like Mike in New York, who says, "I was going through a very difficult, life-changing event, and God used Summit Life teaching to change my heart. Nothing has been the same since. Your teaching is a daily connection with the Word for me now." You're making it possible for JD's teaching to be heard all across the country. And as our way of saying thanks for your gift today, we'll send you an exclusive new Summit Life study called First Love. In many ways, our relationships with others are windows into our relationship with God. And we can only love others well by saturating ourselves in the truth that He first loved us. We'd love to get you a copy of this new resource today. Ask for First Love when you donate at the suggested level of $25 or more by calling 866-335-5220. That's 866-335-5220. Or give and request your copy online at jdgreer.com. While you're on the website, you can also sign up for our email list to get ministry updates, information about new resources, and Pastor JD's latest blog posts delivered straight to your inbox. It's a great way to stay connected with Summit Life, and it's completely free to subscribe. Sign up when you go to jdgreer.com. I'm Derek DeLand. Glad you joined us today. And be sure to tune in Friday on Summit Life with J.D. Greer. Today's program was produced and sponsored by J.D. Greer Ministries.